From Feature Story News in Washington and our bureaus around the world, this is FSN Reports. I'm Kevin McAleese. On today's programme, former Ukrainian leader Viktor Yanukovych flees Kiev.
They've issued an arrest warrant on charges of murder for President Yanukovych, and presumably what they're thinking about mainly is the tactics used by the police and the fact that there were snipers shooting at the demonstrators in the clashes that took place.
Uganda's president signs a controversial anti-gay bill into law amid a wave of international criticism. Jason Collins makes history as the first openly gay NBA player, and the US Supreme Court hears arguments against greenhouse gas regulations.
They claim that there is an egregious problem that must be addressed, global warming. They have chosen to abuse their executive authority to accomplish that goal.
That's coming up on FSN Reports after our latest summary of the day's headlines.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Rebecca Hume. An arrest warrant has been issued for the ousted Ukrainian president, Viktor Yanukovych. Ukraine's interim government says he's wanted over the mass murder of Ukrainian citizens. Yanukovych was removed from office by MPs at the weekend and has since fled the capital to an unconfirmed location. Meanwhile, in Russia, Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev is calling the ouster by the interim government in Ukraine an armed mutiny. EU Foreign Policy Chief Catherine Ashton is due to hold talks in Kiev with Ukraine's interim president, saying she will focus on improving ties with Brussels. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has signed a bill into law which will impose long jail terms on homosexuals. Homosexuality is already illegal in Uganda, but the president had vowed not to bow to international pressure over the controversial new additional legislation. Michael Balake reports from Uganda's State House in Entebbe, where the signing took place.
The bill includes lifetime jail sentences for so-called aggravated homosexuality and 14 years in prison for first-time offenders. It will also be a crime not to report gay people. President Museveni had initially refused to sign the bill, saying he was allowing time for scientific advice. Campaigners in several countries have criticized the bill, saying it infringes on human rights and contravenes international conventions which Uganda has ratified. US President Barack Obama has warned that the legislation will complicate American relations with Uganda, but Ugandan officials dispute this and say the bill proves the country will not bow to international pressure.
US Defense Secretary has announced a raft of military cuts. That's to reflect budgetary realities and the likely threats of the future. The proposals include reducing the US Army by as many as 80,000 troops. Speaking at the Pentagon, Chuck Hagel acknowledged that there are risks to the strategy.
We are repositioning to focus on the strategic challenges and opportunities that will define our future. New technologies, new centers of power, in a world that is growing more volatile, more unpredictable, and in some instances, more threatening to the United States.
TV and movie streaming service Netflix has secured a deal with the United States' largest internet service provider, Comcast. The agreement is designed to provide smoother and quicker streaming for Netflix's 44 million subscribers. William Denzelow reports from New York.
Viewers will avoid bottlenecks that can cause sluggish streaming speeds. The deal follows a US federal appeals court decision to abandon net neutrality laws that previously stopped internet companies from prioritizing content. William Denslow, New York.
From bureaus worldwide, this is FSN. Judicial authorities in the United States say they plan to seek the extradition of captured drug lord Joaquin El Chapo Guzman. El Chapo, who was the leader of the Sinaloa drug cartel, was rearrested in Mexico on Saturday after 13 years on the run. The drug lord escaped from a high-security prison in 2001, just 8 years into a 20-year sentence. Guzman is wanted in the US on charges of drug smuggling. However, Mexican authorities are likely to want to press fresh charges against him. However, former US Attorney's Office Chief of Narcotics, Mark Mukasey, says Guzman will need to serve the remainder of his sentence.
About seven different districts in the United States want the guy. We have an extradition treaty with Mexico. There's going to be a lot of high-level diplomatic negotiation. He wants to stay in Mexico where he can buy people off. We want him here where he can do real time.
Just 3 years after taking over from US TV host Larry King's slot on the American network CNN, Piers Morgan is calling it a day. The former UK tabloid editor and America's Got Talent judge announced the end of his show on Sunday. Morgan admitted his ratings had plummeted because he'd alienated his audiences. Well, from Washington, Nina Maria Potts reports.
For many in the US, a Brit debating American cultural issues, including controversial topics like gun control, was never going to be a winning formula. And he managed to alienate many of his guests. He was very vocal about his support for gun control and got into heated arguments on the issue with several of his interviewees. In response, radio host Alex Jones started a petition to have Piers Morgan deported. He got so many signatures, the White House was forced to respond by citing the Second Amendment and said no one should be punished by the government simply because they'd expressed a view. Nina Maria Potts, Washington.
And that's the latest Feature Story News. Rebecca Hume reporting.
From Feature Story News in Washington, I'm Kevin McAleese. Welcome to FSN Reports. Ukraine's acting government has issued an arrest warrant for former President Viktor Yanukovych, although his current location remains a mystery. After MPs voted Mr. Yanukovych out of office on Saturday, he was rumoured to have fled Kiev and is now sought in connection with scores of deaths during recent bloody anti-government protests in the capital. The Obama administration reacted to events by warning neighbouring Russia not to intervene in Ukraine, fearing action from Moscow could see a return to violence. EU officials are already in the Ukrainian capital to assist with financial and political support for the interim leadership. And I discussed the latest situation with Kiev-based correspondent Gulliver Cragg.
There does seem to be a certain trend at the moment saying that he's in Crimea in the south of Ukraine, and more specifically in the city of Sevastopol, which is where the Russian Black Sea fleet is located. And the rumour is that there is a ship from that fleet prepared to take him away out of Ukraine. But I must stress, this is not confirmed information.
Gulliver, can you explain, because the acting government there in Ukraine, they've issued an arrest warrant for Yanukovych. What exactly are the details of that arrest warrant?
They've issued an arrest warrant on charges of murder for President Yanukovych, and presumably what they're thinking about mainly is the tactics used by the police and the fact that there were snipers shooting at the demonstrators in the clashes that took place on Tuesday and Thursday of last week, in which 82 people were killed. Also, at least another 18 people were killed in late January. And I think that the arrest warrant is aimed at mass killings, because that's obviously the thing that Ukrainians are immediately right now most upset about. This country is in mourning. Tens of thousands of people were laying flowers and candles for these dead in the areas where they were killed yesterday in the center of Kiev. But again, the people I've been speaking to investigating these documents reveal various different payments that he made in the purchasing of his astonishingly lavish lifestyle, his golden toilets, his collection of cartoon gangster automobiles and other classics of automotive history, and his 12 mansions, hunting lodge, and I'm just sort of beginning to describe the amount of stuff that Viktor Yanukovych had. Say that the documents they found just on the sort of financial corruption side of things are easily enough to put him in jail for life without even having to charge him with murder. But obviously it's the murder charge that they've issued first, because this is the thing that Ukrainians are most upset about right now.
And have you got any understanding of what the top priorities at the moment for that acting government will be?
The top priority is to actually create a government. There's a Speaker of Parliament who is acting president, but there isn't a government, a cabinet of ministers. There isn't a prime minister, and Ukraine has to choose a prime minister. Tomorrow is the date they've set for it. Already there are a lot of tensions emerging about this. Ruslana, the pop singer, who was also one of the leaders always speaking from the stage on the center of Independence Square, has said that there are a lot of discussions and between politicians behind the scenes that she doesn't like at all, and she issued a message saying that this may be a government of betrayal. If it is, I think that the protesters will absolutely not stop protesting. At the moment, there are groups from the Maidan Self-Defense Forces guarding the parliament, because there's no police, really, at the moment in Ukraine, and as well as controlling people's IDs at the entry and generally doing what the police always used to do. They've set up a lie detector on the esplanade in front of the parliament building, and they said there's only one question: have you ever taken a bribe? And they want anyone who is in the running for a cabinet post to answer this question with their finger in the lie detector. Now, when you consider that Ukraine is ranked as one of the most corrupt countries in the world by Transparency International, just a little bit above Cameroon and the Central African Republic, if I'm not mistaken, I would imagine that if that lie detector actually worked, then you would find that a lot of candidates would be considered ineligible.
Correspondent Gulliver Cragg in Kiev. An armed mutiny, how Russia's Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev described the acting government in Ukraine. A message backed up by Russia's decision to recall its ambassador from Ukraine for talks. The events unfolded as Russian President Vladimir Putin watched the closing ceremony of the Sochi Winter Games. And earlier I spoke to our Moscow correspondent Tom Barton and began by asking him how Russia has reacted.
That sporting victory in Sochi really overshadowed by the astonishing events in Kiev, and Vladimir Putin will have been watching those very closely indeed. This whole protest movement, since the very beginning, Russia convincing Yanukovych to turn away from that trade and reform deal, that association agreement with the EU, that really sparked all of these protests in the very start. And Ukraine, playing an enormous role in Putin's not at all secret, very public project to try and recreate a great Russian-led Eurasian Union, customs union, perhaps even slightly more than that, tying countries of the former Soviet Union back to Moscow. And without that, without Ukraine as part of that, the whole project does look rather shaky indeed. And so there's that. There's also a lot of links between Ukraine culturally, with many eastern and southern Ukrainians speaking Russian and having cultural links there as well. And that's been used by various political figures in Russia to whip up, some would say hysteria, some very strong words in the past, saying that the possibility of partition for those eastern Ukrainians to bring them closer to Russia is a real one. And that is precisely the kind of talk that the US is worried about, and has led to them warning Russia against any military intervention in Ukraine, as that would bring further violence and bloodshed to what is already a very tragic situation.
Can you explain the role that the German leader, Chancellor Angela Merkel, has played since Yanukovych left Kiev and was replaced by an acting government? Can you explain what her role has been in relation to Russia's reaction?
Yes, I think that Angela Merkel was one of those Western leaders who saw what was developing as far as Russia's eyes were concerned, that what had been quite a successful policy on their part was suddenly and dramatically overturned. And it seems like, in Kiev at least, a total victory now for those opposed to Viktor Yanukovych, who was very strongly supported by Russia, financially and otherwise. Her aim was to try and ease any loss of face and stop any knee-jerk reaction by Moscow. There has been the strongest words yet from Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev, who has called the protests an armed mutiny, which are ominous words indeed, and precisely the kind of thing that the US and European countries want to try and avoid, those words becoming anything more than just words. However, it's not known how Russia will respond, and they do have certain different tools that they could use. They've previously used trade means, customs effectively customs embargoes by tightening the customs regimes on the border, which have hurt Ukrainian exporters. And the old story of Russia's gas pipelines going into the Ukraine, the fact that they could turn those off. There had been a huge discount of gas passed to Viktor Yanukovych, along with a $15 billion loan. All of that looks very uncertain now as well. So rather pulling the financial rug from under Ukraine's feet if Russia deems that it doesn't like the new government. The West now scrambling to provide financial support to try and shore up what they think could be a huge financial black hole heading their way as well.
Our Moscow correspondent, Tom Barton. This is FSN Reports. A controversial anti-gay bill has been signed into law by Uganda's President Museveni. The move, condemned by the White House as a backward step, could see homosexual sex punished by life in prison. Uganda is the latest African state to tighten laws against gays and lesbians. And according to Amnesty International, homosexuality is now illegal in 38 out of 54 countries on the continent. For more details, I spoke to correspondent Michael Baleke in the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
This homosexuality law signed by the President Museveni Shido today in Uganda, this law toughens penalties for homosexual sex. It sets out a 14-year jail sentence for first-time offenders. And this legislation also sets life imprisonment as the maximum penalty for aggravated homosexuality. Of course, aggravated homosexuality, this is a category of offences, is defined as repeated gay sex between consenting adults and acts involving minors, disabled persons, and well, persons infected with HIV. This is aggravated homosexuality. The law also outlaws the promotion of homosexuality and requires people to denounce gays.
There are certain aspects of this law that were removed. Is that correct?
After worldwide condemnation of the legislation, of course, the death penalty was dropped. Yeah, and that was, of course, put to the life. That's how the life imprisonment came in.
President Museveni had suggested that he was waiting on advice from scientists in the United States before going ahead and signing this law. He's decided just to ignore that and sign the law because he's convinced that there is no genetic or no gay gene, for want of a better term.
Yes, Kevin, you're right about that. The president said he did not really want advice from only U.S. scientists, but in general scientists. So he actually, while he was signing the bill, he was flanked by about almost five to seven scientists around him. But he also intimated that he had talked to some scientists in the U.S. and the U.K. And that's how he finalized that no study actually had shown that you can be homosexual by nature. So he said, and this is the reason that he had agreed to sign the bill. He said the scientists told him it's the main cause of homosexuality is nature. Basically, the way people are nurtured in society, that's the main cause of homosexuality. And he said that actually society can do something about it to discourage the trend. So he agreed to sign the bill on that notion, that it is not nature, but it's nurture.
President Obama has already responded to this, and he had said that this was a danger to Uganda's gay community, a country where homosexuality or acts of homosexuality were already illegal. How has the gay community in Uganda responded to these events today?
Already fearing for, of course, for their lives. They don't want to speak on the phone. They're actually asking who you are, and they want to know your details before they tell you where they are at. But, of course, they've condemned President Museveni for, of course, coming up with this and signing the legislation. And they believe they're being targeted, of course. And the question was asked to President Museveni whether he would allow to meet the gay community and probably talk to them, which he rejected. And he actually dodged the question. He didn't want to be committed whether he's going to meet them or not.
Yeah. But is there a sense that you can pick up on in the country of is there support for the president's decision today?
On the outside, more like a political plus for the president. Many people actually have been in the streets and have been excited and they have showed confidence that, of course, we need also to bring into this that there will be an election in two years from now. And this is more like a thank you. People will definitely give him the vote because of a thank you for this bill.
So you're saying that President Museveni's decision will actually galvanize the support for his bid for the 2016 election?
Most likely. We're coming into election years. This is not going to work for the president alone. You know, the president heads a party. This is the most popular party, the NRM party. And during a retreat a few days ago, his party, which is made up of mostly the members of parliament, almost, I would say, 60-70% of parliament is from the NRM, were in support of this bill. And they promised to stand by him in 2016. And, of course, this came out like the president was also thanking them. But, you know what, let me give you this bill since you're going to stand by me. And it's going to go down all the way to the villages where people will be thinking, like, you know, my MP stood up for this bill. And, of course, it's not going to work for the president alone. It's also going to work for the rest of the politicians.
Michael Beleke in the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Today, oil, gas, coal and farming corporations joined with Republican Congress members in arguing to the Supreme Court that the Environmental Protection Agency is illegally overreaching in its attempt to regulate greenhouse gas emissions from power plants and other sources. Though the High Court ruled just a few years ago that greenhouse gases are dangerous and the government has a right and an obligation to limit them, the challengers hope to force them to revisit that decision, or at least hamper the EPA's authority. Our Capitol Hill correspondent Alice Olstein was in the courtroom for this morning's argument and says it all boils down to how much latitude agencies have tackling something as complicated and serious as climate change.
The last time the Supreme Court ruled on climate change, Massachusetts had sued the George W. Bush administration for not doing enough. Today, 12 states led by Texas sued the Obama administration for going too far. Backed by dozens of fossil fuel corporations and Republican politicians, represented by Shannon Gosling with the Southeastern Legal Foundation, who is also challenging the federal government's actions.
Although they claim that there is an egregious problem that must be addressed, global warming, they have chosen to abuse their executive authority to accomplish that goal.
On the steps of the court right after the arguments, Gosling told FSN that she thinks the Environmental Protection Agency broke the law when it extended its carbon emissions rules on cars to cover power plants, and when it raised the bar for how much a single plant could emit before needing a permit.
When you have a selective interpretation that aggrandizes your power, that is a problem. And that should be a problem for all of Americans, regardless of whether somebody believes in or does not believe in human-caused global warming.
The selective interpretation she's talking about is the EPA's decision to change the limits set by Congress on how much greenhouse gas a single source can pump into the atmosphere without a permit. From 250 tons a year to 100,000. The agency did this with the so-called tailoring rule because they said they didn't have the resources to enforce the stricter limit. And they wanted to go after the biggest polluters first and work their way down. During Monday's arguments, Justice Elena Kagan called this fudging the numbers, but she said it's a classic case where it's better to defer to an agency's right to tackle the problem as they see fit. Solicitor General Donald Verrilli, who is arguing on behalf of the Obama administration, agreed and said having to make separate rules for each separate pollutant and each separate source of that pollutant is too slow a process to deal with the runaway effects of climate change. He told the justices, every year that passes, the threat to future generations gets worse. Bill Snape with the Center for Biological Diversity, which weighed in on this case when it was at a lower court, agreed.
The Environmental Protection Agency, and in fact the entire federal government, needs to move with great alacrity to deal with these harmful pollutants. The more time we wait, the worse the damage is going to be and the more expensive it is going to be. We need to act. We need to act now. Yet we have political forces, industry forces, energy sources, the fossil fuel industry that doesn't want to have greenhouse gases regulated. That's the subscript here, is that they're using clever legal arguments to really take aim at the entire greenhouse program itself. They're making these arguments because they don't want any greenhouse pollutants to be regulated.
The industry forces behind this case include the Ohio Coal Association, the National Mining Association, the Texas Oil and Gas Association, and the American Petroleum Institute, among many others, whose profits are on the line should the Supreme Court uphold the EPA's rules. But while those companies say the Obama administration has gone too far, Snape and other environmental advocates say they haven't gone nearly far enough.
5 years into the Obama administration, we have the architecture put in place, a lot of proposed rules, but really no meaningful greenhouse gas reduction. And I have to give the president some credit. The previous administration, of course, didn't want to do anything. But here we are in the year 2014. It is well established that greenhouse gases are harming humanity, and the United States still has taken almost no regulatory actions to actually reduce greenhouse gases.
The court is expected to issue a ruling this summer, just a few months before a contentious midterm election. In Washington, I'm Alice Olstein.
And finally tonight, the NBA saw its first openly gay basketball player take to the court on Sunday. Jason Collins made history with his winning appearance for the Brooklyn Nets against the Los Angeles Lakers. The 35-year-old center revealed he was gay at the end of last season when he became a free agent. For more on the story, I spoke to our New York correspondent, Ira Spitzer.
Jason Collins, who made his debut last night for the Brooklyn Nets, the professional basketball team, is the second major athlete here in the States to come out of the closet to announce that he's gay. The other one, however, was not a professional athlete. That was Michael Sam, a collegiate athlete. So Jason Collins is the first professional athlete to make this announcement. And it does, of course, set the stage for Michael Sam, who is much younger than Collins. Sam is 22 years old, whereas Collins is 35. And Sam is also regarded as potentially a much better player in the sport of American football. So, yeah, Jason Collins really setting a very historic precedent last night by coming out and playing 11 minutes in a game, not doing anything great, but performing well enough. And he is on a 10-day contract, so we'll see how that goes.
Do we know what the reaction has been from players on his new team as well as professional basketball fans?
He came into a good situation on the Nets because he actually has played. You know, this guy has been in the league, you know, for a while. He's 35 years old. So, you know, he's played with a lot of people before. He just had not announced publicly that he was gay. So he has played with his current coach, Jason Kidd, and also a couple of the veterans on the Nets. So those guys, you know, they know him. And by then bringing him in, you know, they're basically already saying, you know, that we accept, you know, accept this guy that we already know. In terms of the fans, you know, when he made his debut, it was in Los Angeles, and maybe a little almost anticlimactic because no one knew it was about to happen. He just sort of came off the bench. But then people did give him a nice round of applause. And again, in social media, you know, there's been people are impressed with, you know, with his courage and also the courage of professional basketball to take this step.
How does this story fit in with the anti-gay legislation movement that we've seen around the world? We discussed earlier Uganda, for one. How does this fit into the bigger picture?
The things going on, you know, around the world with some of the anti-gay legislation and rhetoric, you know, I do think that has sort of upped the ante for people who are gay to sort of be open about who they are if they are in public life, you know, such as a professional athlete is. So I do think, you know, I don't know if that kind of thing, how much that may have influenced Jason Collins or Michael Sam. But, you know, I do have the sense, certainly as fans who are not, you know, are not anti-gay, but may not necessarily have been pro-gay or really even care that much. I do feel like when, you know, people that hear about sort of the anti-gay legislation happening in other places, you know, are sort of realizing that it is important just to people to be open about who they are. So I think it is important in that regard as well.
Ira Spitzer. And that's the Monday edition of FSN Reports. You can tell us what you think of our programme by emailing us reports@featurestory.com, and you can follow us on Twitter. We're there @FeatureStory. Coming up on Tuesday, we put the defence budget under the microscope. That's Tuesday, but for now, I'm Kevin McAleese in Washington alongside producer Simon Marks and Rebecca Hume on the bulletin desk. For everyone with Feature Story news everywhere, have a great evening. Goodbye.